Hi guys, I don't normally run ads on this show, but this is the family business, luggagewarehouse.co.za. My dad, my brother, my stepbrother, my uncle have all worked for Luggage Warehouse directly, and I've done freelance brand strategy for them for years now. So it supports the whole family, it supports this show indirectly. So if you're looking for luggage, accessories, handbags and fashion stuff, even you can go to luggagewarehouse.co.za. And there are two products that I want to pull out for you here. Number one being Builder Set, which allows you to create your own combination of large, small, medium, check-in, hand luggage, all that stuff. And it gives you a discount for each additional bag you buy, up to a certain limit, I think. But you can get great discounts on big collections of big luggage. So if you're thinking of immigrating, it's the perfect way to kind of gear up for that. And the second thing I want to pull out is Luggage Glove, which is a protective sleeve that my dad invented. My brother has kind of perfected over the years. It's a thick 3D fabric mesh sleeve that pulls over your luggage and then locks closed. It's got a TSA lock. It's got holes for the handles, so it's quite convenient. It's not like single-use plastic wraps because you don't have to cut open a hole in the plastic to use the handle. You can take it off easily. It's got a combination lock, and it's much more sustainable because you're not just murdering turtles with single-use plastic. But it makes the bag much more difficult to get into, and it protects it from bumps and scrapes. And if you are emigrating, then those are two important things, because you might be carrying actual valuables in your check-in luggage, and because they're going to be heavy and you might be going a long distance, they can pick up some major damage. So Luggage Gloves do a great job of protecting your luggage in the long term. That's it for my pitch. Luggagewarehouse.co.za. There's a link in the show notes. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the South African Expats Podcast. This is Jonathan Varnker. Today, we are talking to Paul Goodwill, who is one of the admins of a Facebook group called Leaving South Africa. Paul himself and his family have lived obviously in South Africa, then Canada, the UK, and Australia, although not necessarily in that order. Right now, he lives in regional Australia close to Perth. But today, we're going to be talking to Paul because as the admin of Leaving South Africa, he's got quite a wide view on immigration, on the issues that people deal with, why they leave and where they should go. We'll chat a little bit about Ottawa, Calgary, Perth, or at least regional Australia. And I think we'll benefit from Paul's wide experience of having moved around quite a bit in his lifetime and some very specific information about how to move to countries that are difficult to move to, like Canada and Australia. We'll talk about trade certifications, you know, those little golden tickets that can get you into a country where you can be a very highly qualified professional in a lot of fields, but it might help you better if you can fix a car or fix a diesel engine. So, Paul, thank you so much for joining us and taking the time, mate.
No worries, buddy. It's a pleasure.
Why don't you summarize the journey that you've had since you left South Africa? I think it was in 2002.
Yeah, we've lived in four countries now. Well, we left South Africa in 2002 originally. We went to the UK.
Right.
And we were there on the normal two-year working holiday visa. We were going to stay longer, but then we thought, no, you know, the UK is not really for us. And we weren't too impressed with it. It was okay. We traveled quite extensively around there. And we went to quite a few, you know, I probably saw more of the UK than most people in England, because I worked a job where I had a four on and four off shift. We'd get in our car, because the UK is so small, we'd just get in our car on weekends and just go and explore it.
That's amazing.
We went to a lot of places, Isle of Skye. We went up to northern Scotland, you know, Tintagel and the west coast there, Cornwall. We saw most of it,
right?
Almost all of it.
But then you decided it wasn't for you. Was it the weather or some other aspect?
We felt that the UK sort of got to, it was very advanced up till about the 70s, and then it sort of stopped.
Right.
But remember, we didn't live in London. We lived in Southampton, which was down on the south coast. And we enjoyed it. But, you know, we didn't want to dedicate too much more time there. So we decided to just go back to South Africa for a bit and then later see where we can go after that. So we went back for a while. And when we got back, we thought, no, we don't want to stay here. So I went to go and see a lawyer friend of mine. And he said to me, you know, to immigrate to different places, you need to have the skills to get there. So he said to me, the best way to do that is to get something like a trade.
Sure.
I did a bit of research and then I decided to get a plumbing license.
Okay.
So I got my plumbing license because I used to be in IT. I used to work for a large retailer group in South Africa before they joined Massmart. So my job in there was networking and stock take controls and a lot of management in the shop, etc. But then what happened is I got this plumbing license And when I went back to him, I said, okay, where can I go now? And then he said, wherever you want.
Yeah.
So we said,
Canada, so we Australia.
Said, yep. So I said to him, what do you recommend? He said, well, he's moving to Canada. He recommends Canada. So we said, yeah, let's do it. So about 10 months later, after we applied, we got permanent residence straight away.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife and I and our 18-month-old daughter just landed in Toronto. We didn't know a single person there. We didn't have any contact. We just landed with two suitcases and ourselves.
What year was this?
That was 2010, May 2010. And then caught a bus the next day to Ottawa, to the capital. And we stayed there in a little guest house for about a week until we could find a place to live. And luckily, I ran into this guy named Mark. He was a retired military guy from the Canadian military. And he still stays in contact with me today. But it was just brilliant because he had this furnished basement at his house. It had everything we needed in it. So we didn't have to buy anything. It had all the furniture, fridge, everything we needed. And we just had to get a few clothes and miscellaneous items. We were very lucky. And then he took us for a drive around the city, got us acquainted with the areas and helped me with a lot of things.
Amazing.
And then it didn't take me too long to get a job,
So you, you got the plumbing certification. How long did that take?
In South Africa, that took me about 5 years. And I had my own little plumbing business too. But I needed help from other licensed people to get letters from them to say that I've worked for them, a licensed person. And to me, I highly recommend getting a trade like that because it's literally got me into two countries very easily.
Sure. It's interesting. You gave up your, what I assume was an IT career trajectory and took on a trade. And as you say, it's incredible that Canada, Australia, so many countries, they're looking for these kind of trades. So it is really a choice. As an IT professional, I guess most people would say that you chose that trade as a means of getting into the country, not because you love plumbing or anything.
100%.
Is that still your business?
No. So it's amazing how you get that to get in, but that doesn't mean that you need to do that when you get there. That's just like your golden ticket to get in there.
I see, because you didn't even have a job when you got there.
No.
You just had the certification.
Yeah. So I did plumbing there for a little bit, but then I soon got out of it and started doing other things. In most of these countries, upgrading or upskilling or changing your career is very easy. Now, a lot of people have this misconception of if you get into a country based on that skill, that's what you need to do, which is, there's nothing further from the truth. You can basically get there and do whatever you want.
Right.
Based on if you have permanent residence. Like if you're sponsored on a work visa, then yes, you have to stick to that. But
right.
I've never had a work permit. I've always gone on permanent residence.
I see.
Now, what they do too, I know for Australia, they'll give you a little trade test kind of thing in Cape Town. I know they do it there, which you have to pass, but it's a very basic skill set, but once you've granted that permanent resident visa, if you're into whatever, once you've been given that residence visa, you can go and do whatever you want.
And when you've got that trades certification, one big barrier for a lot of people is age, because a lot of the time they're looking for someone who's under 40 maximum, and preferably 27 with 2 degrees and work experience. So if you've got that certification, does that just supersede all of that?
If they are desperate for electricians, say, and you are 45 and there's a company willing to bring you in, then that means nothing. You can come in, no problem.
And if there's no sponsor job, if there's just, you have the certification, but you happen to be older, does it affect your chances, do you think?
You'll lose points, but if you are willing to work in a more regional area or relocate to a regional area, then that gives you more points. Like in Australia, they've got a thing called state sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another misconception is that you can get granted a visa like a 190, and that is basically the same as a 189, which a 189 is a fully independent permanent resident visa based on your skill set or your education. Now, you can get a 190, which is basically the state is going to give you an extra 10 points towards your sponsorship. So if you fall short on age or education or any other shortfall on your points, you can go to a state and say, hey, would you sponsor me?
Right.
And again, once they sponsor you, you don't have to live in that state.
There's no time limit. You can just arrive and then leave if you want to.
Yeah, we got sponsored by South Australia. I've never set foot in South Australia. And today I'm an Australian citizen.
Right. So there's games to be played.
Yeah, it's a moral obligation, not a legal one. A lot of immigration agents will tell you that, no, you're risking this and you're risking that. But honestly, there's no, if you look at the terms and conditions of the visa, it says that you are allowed to work anywhere in Australia and it's a full permanent resident visa.
Very interesting. Jumping back on that question then, what do you think is the easiest trade to get into?
Probably carpentry or something like that.
Right, because obviously mechanical engineering is a little bit of a course.
You know, I find I've worked with a lot of mechanical engineers and it just depends on what the demand is for that skill. Like you could be a mechanical engineer and you could possibly get you in, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to earn very good money.
Sure.
Because if the market is saturated with those kinds of people, then, you know, you're not going to get the required remuneration you're after. I'll tell you, one of the highest earning people here in Australia is a diesel mechanic.
Is that a mining thing predominantly?
Yeah, they could, you know, a diesel mechanic here can make $90+ an hour easily.
Jeez, crazy.
Easy. You know, and a mechanical engineer is not going to get that unless you're in some senior position, but the average Joe mechanical engineer is not going to get that.
Interesting. We don't know the specifics of the lengths of times, the cost of those courses, the difficulty mm-hmm. of those courses, but definitely something worth looking into. And I think you would correlate that with a group like Leaving South Africa will have quite a lot of information about what people are looking for. Also, if you look on LinkedIn, if you speak to some immigration companies, they will be saying Canada's looking for this kind of person.
Yeah.
So you can kind of make a plan. You made this decision and then you spent 5 years becoming certified as a plumber to do it?
Yeah, so it took me a while. I mean, it probably could have taken me less, but I sort of, when we were back in South Africa, I was sort of enjoying it again. And then, you know, my little company was growing and I didn't have that sense of urgency to leave again.
Sure.
So I just, you know, I took my time and did my thing. And then, but then my daughter was born. And once she mm-hmm. was born, we said, no, this is right, time to go. Right.
Did you study through UNISA or tech or how?
No, I did it all myself. And then I got the books myself and, you know, I learned from other guys, worked with other people. And then I had to go and do my trade test at Olifantsfontein. That's another thing that I can't specify enough is that if it's not through Olifantsfontein, like the government recognized trade test center, it won't mm-hmm. be recognized anywhere in the world. You have to go for that government issued one. So I know there's a lot of people offering courses in trades, this and that. But if it's not from the government, you're wasting your time. It has to be right. The Olifantsfontein Red Seal.
I see. Right. Okay. You initially started as an IT technician or network engineer and then changed to plumbing for Ottawa. And then what did you switch to after that?
Oh, in the oil fields, we were doing pipe fitting. We were doing oil and gas maintenance. And you learn a lot of things about the production of oil, how they take oil out of the oil sands up in northern Canada. Mm-hmm. I've gone from anything from building a diamond mine up north to all kinds of things.
Wow. But so have you had that big beard and the flannel shirt and an axe and like the whole lumberjack vibe?
Hard hats. But I've worked in some remote places. There's a diamond mine up north called Gacho Quay, which I was on the construction site there, and it was just freezing cold. They had minus 50 temperatures, and you were so remote, you couldn't even drive there. You had to take a plane in there.
Jeez.
Sometimes when your shift would end, so you'd go on a 3-in-1 shift, so you'd be there 3 weeks, come home for a week, and if the weather was bad, the aeroplane wouldn't leave Edmonton to come and pick you up, so you'd just be stuck there because the weather was too bad to leave.
I've got a friend who worked on oil rigs on a similar kind of 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off basis, I think it was, or could have even been a monthly basis, I'm not sure. But it's very well paid work, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. So it was good. It was a good experience, and I'm not sorry for one bit for doing it. It was great.
So what's because I think we're going to be speaking more generally than specifically, give me a precis version of how you see Ottawa and Calgary as places to live.
Okay, so Ottawa's the capital of Canada. So if you're into politics and services and that kind of thing, then Ontario in general is more for you. Calgary is more for the oil industry, although I believe there's now a lot of sort of IT companies moving in there because of the cheaper rates of property. Mm-hmm. They're coming in there now because Calgary is sort of trying to diverse itself away from oil mm-hmm. for obvious reasons. And Vancouver is more sort of tourism, restaurant kind of scene. It's probably a lot like Cape Town, I would say.
Right. Do you think that people moving to Ottawa or Calgary, that the cities are that specific? Obviously, there are ancillary businesses and whole lifestyles running around. It's not just everyone's a miner, I imagine, in
working in oil. Yeah, for sure. No, absolutely.
But in general, do those cities have that strong theme running through them, kind of politics and the government in one and then oil in the other?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you live in Ottawa, you could get a very good government job if you were into, you know, every headquarter of every government department is there. So if you're more into that, you know, anything based around it would just sort of like Pretoria, you know, anything based around government or.
Yeah.
It's a wealthy city, obviously, because all the taxes go there. But Calgary, I would say, is in my opinion, was a better city because we had the Rockies right next to us. We could go to Banff to the ski resort for the weekend. We could go up to Jasper. It was a fantastic, beautiful place to live.
Right. And if you could recommend anywhere now, if South African asked you, I want to move to Canada and location isn't a problem, where would you say they should go?
I would say it depends on their industry too.
Sure.
Weather-wise, I'd say southern British Columbia is probably the best weather. Mm-hmm. But if you enjoy skiing in winter and those kinds of things, then Calgary is good. Calgary is probably a lot cheaper to live in than most of British Columbia.
Sure.
But if you're in the sort of finance sector or, you know, those kind of white-collar jobs, then I'd say Toronto is your place, even Montreal.
And Montreal's on the French side, yes?
Yeah, Montreal's in Quebec, but they do speak a lot of English there. You would not have an issue being English and living in Montreal.
Do you feel like is there a cultural difference between the French-speaking Canadians and the English-speaking Canadians?
Very much so. There's even a cultural difference east and west.
Right.
There's a great divide there. You know, a lot of the Western Canadians, especially the Albertans, they've got quite a disdain for the Easterners because they feel that all their taxes go there, all their wealth goes there, and they don't get much back for it.
Okay.
Which is pretty much, it's pretty much like Australia too, in many ways.
Right. Except all the money's earned in the east and goes west, right?
In Australia?
Yes.
No. Western Australia is the powerhouse of this country too.
North, east, south, west. Oh, okay. Isn't Sydney on the east coast?
We have a lot of iron ore mines here. I know Northern Queensland's got some mining too. I think they've got some coal in that, but Western Australia is the powerhouse. We've got iron ore. We've got diamonds. Gold.
Okay, so you're speaking on a much more fundamental level of wealth creation, not, you know, Sydney's businesses and...
Yeah, hands down, Western Australia is the wealthiest state, there's no question.
Oh, wow. Okay, interesting.
Interestingly enough, too, is that Western Australia and the ACT have the same HDI ranking as Norway. So your quality of life or your standard of living is the same as Norway.
Wow.
Which is ranked consistently as the best country in the world.
Yeah, of course. So let's talk a little bit about, I mean, you live close to Perth, you say regional Australia, and you've just, in our kind of upfront, described it as paradise. So tell me more about paradise in Australia.
So where I live, it's very underpopulated. We've got forests here. We've got, when I say pristine beaches, I mean the best I've seen in the world. It's absolutely fantastic. Because you could go down, you know, there's a place down here, I've been down to one called Smith's Beach, and you go down there and it's literally you and a couple of other people on that beach and you're looking at turquoise water, just absolutely pristine. You know, something like you'd see on a tropical island.
Mm.
And then we've got forests as you can go hiking through. We've got caves and there's wine farms here. It's sort of very much like the Stellenbosch area, but, you know, not as mountainous, but it's got a lot of forests, there's so much to do. And
sure.
It's because it's so underpopulated, for me, that is brilliant. I love it.
Do you think that the level of underpopulation is such that some people might feel uncomfortable there?
No. I mean, you've got, it's not like sparsely populated in such a way. You've got, on the coast, you've got places like Busselton, they call it a city now, but you've got, I'm living near Bunbury. Bunbury is quite a little port city. And just, you know, Perth, if I wanted to go to Perth, it's only about an hour and a half away and I'm already in Mandurah, which is not so
right.
far.
So just not so, densely, I mean, populated like a Johannesburg or conurbation kind of thing.
No. Yeah. So if you look at most of Australia, it's sort of, and especially Western Australia, if you look at it from Perth going up and down, it's sort of, it's growing along the coastline, not inland.
Sure. Yeah. No one wants to go inland in Australia, except the scorpions and the trapdoor spiders. And
well, I must say, where I am, I've only come across one snake in the 4 years I've been here, and there's a little baby python that was harmless, little thing. And then there's the spiders that are harmless too. They can bite you, but they won't kill you.
Sure. Most of the really, really deadly stuff lives closer, more inland, right?
Yeah, more inland, and I'd say maybe, you know, northern Queensland. I know there's some beaches you can't swim at in certain times of the year because they've got those deadly bottlefish. Yeah, those kind of – but over here, down here, the only poisonous – well, there's sharks here, but you've got there's a blue ring octopus, which is deadly.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yep.
But, you know, honestly, I've never seen one. I've been to the beach many – I haven't seen one yet.
When you left for the second time, you had a young daughter. Is it still – do you still have one child?
No. So we got a second one. My son was born in Calgary. So he was born there, and then when we moved here, he was only also about 18 months old.
And if you had to, I'm going to keep jumping back between Canada and Australia here. If you had to sum up, I guess, family support or life with a family in Canada versus Australia, how would you compare them?
In what way? From the government or from?
Not so much from the government, from more a quality of life for children, education, freedom to roam. I imagine Australia's got more than that than Canada just because of the weather. But are they... Do you feel like they've got a better lifestyle in Australia than Canada?
Absolutely. And more opportunity.
Why do you say that, more opportunity?
I personally feel Australia's got more opportunity career-wise, but also even for education. Like in Canada, you've got to pay for your own university, and you can get a student loan, and you could pay, you know, quite a hefty price back on interest and all that. But over here, they've got a thing called HECS, which is short for Higher Education Credit System. That goes totally on your government account. So you can go to university, you get a loan from the government for the fees. And when you come out, you have to earn more than $18,000 a year to start paying that back. And when you do start paying it back, it comes off of your salary automatically. Like you pay it back weekly or monthly or whatever, however often you get paid. And it's got no interest. It's only gauged by inflation. So if the inflation is 1%, it'll only go up by 1% that year, et cetera, et cetera. So, and you can take your time paying it off.
What is inflation in Australia right now?
The last time I saw it was about 2.3%.
So I think better than the, I didn't even know what we've got, 7 or something like that, or I'm not sure.
No, I know. It's crazy, eh?
Yeah. I had a friend who, when I lived in Japan, he had studied in Canada. He was Canadian and had done a couple of degrees and taken loans for them. I think he was $100,000 in student loan debt.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's Canada does have some support for that. But I get the feeling that it's another version of the American system designed to kind of keep you in debt.
Absolutely. Now, the HECS system here, I remember, too, that if you get a degree in Australia and you leave and you go work somewhere for 10 years, well, obviously no one's going to come after you for that money because they can only deduct it from you based upon you working.
Right.
It's almost like a government garnishing order for your debt. But if you got a degree and left, no one's going to chase you.
Sure. Okay. Interesting. One common refrain that I hear whenever I speak about immigrating to Australia, which is not super common, but is people will reactively say, oh no, it's full of redneck bogans. And Australia's not really very advanced at all. It's a lot of bogans is what I hear. Like, what's your take on that?
There are some bogans around. I mean, but in general, I would say out of all the countries I've lived in, Australia is the most advanced for sure. It's clean. As an example, every park you go to here, and when I say park, like I mean across the road, down here from my house or anywhere, you go down there and there's a barbecue for you to use for free. It doesn't cost you a cent. You go down there, you press the button and the thing fires up and you can barbecue your meat.
A gas barbecue.
Yeah, it's gas made out of stainless steel and bricks.
But amazing.
You go down to the beach here, you go down, you know, any road stop, there's a little resting area next to the road. There's a barbecue there that you can use for free. It doesn't cost you a cent. Little picnic area.
So you can literally go and catch some shrimp and put them on the barbie.
Yep. If you want to do that, yeah, you can. It's so developed. It's something else, I tell you.
So where you're living now, what is the structurally your home Is it similar to a South African home? Is it double story? Does it have a basement? Lots of insulation, you know, gun firing ports. What's the whole setup?
No, so this one, we are Western Australia. They build out of brick for the most part. If you go to sort of Queensland, I think they've got some houses there on stilts. And when I was in Tasmania, I saw that they do a brick outer skin and then the inside is sort of drywall with insulation, obviously for weather reasons. But here in Western Australia, it's just like a South African house, except a floating foundation. They don't go into the ground.
Interesting. Okay. So in terms of culture shock, most South Africans, when they reach Australia, do they feel more or less at home, or is there a certain sense of disconnection?
So I would say it's very similar to South Africa. You know, you drive on the same side of the road, the signs look the same, the cars look the same, the houses are similar, except that a lot of the houses here look more of the same. Not, you know, in South Africa, it's probably the only country I've lived in where every house looks different. You know,
right.
Your house, unless you're living in a complex, your house will not look the same as your neighbor's, whereas in every other country I've lived in, it's sort of like you buy off a plan. You know, that's the shape you're getting.
Yeah.
And then it almost looked like stamps going down the street. So, but you know, if you enjoy brying and beach and camping and fishing at the dam and all that kind of stuff, Australia is your place.
And the daily lifestyle in much colder areas like Calgary and Ottawa is also fairly cold, right? It's quite far to the north.
Oh, very cold. Yeah. Ottawa, temperature wise, doesn't drop in centigrade as far as Calgary, but you feel a lot colder in winter because of the humidity. Ottawa gets extremely hot in summer and very humid. Mm-hmm. And in winter, it does the opposite because the humidity gets cold, but then it goes to your bones. Eh? It's
right.
Very, very cold. Whereas in Calgary, it gets cold, but it's more of a dry cold.
Right.
So in Ottawa, it'll be minus 30, and in Calgary, minus 40, and Calgary will feel warmer.
It's interesting. I've never thought about a humid cold. It's always cold, always felt fairly dry for me. So that's quite strange. And I guess you have to shovel 10 feet of snow out your front door every day and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, and you know, I can say this about Canada. You know, for something as simple as in winter, going to get milk at the shop. So in summer, it's open the door, get in your car, drive down to the shop, come back. But in winter, you get up in the morning, you've got to shovel the snow, you've got to start up the car in the garage, get the engine warm. Mm-hmm. And in winter, you've got to plug in your car at all times. You know, it's got a little plug coming out the front of the bonnet where you plug it in, and that keeps the oil warm.
Wow.
And the coolant so that the engine doesn't freeze. But even so, even when you start it like that, the belts make a big noise when you start it because they've obviously frozen in the position, and then the engine starts turning. It's just not good for your car. And then, you know, most of the time you've got 8 sets of rims for your car because you've got a set of summer tires and a set of winter tires. So you're changing your tires every, say, 6 months because your summer tires do nothing for you in winter because the rubber gets hard and then there's the contact just falls.
So you get those spike tires?
No, you buy winter tires that are a much softer compound. So they don't get hard like summer tires would. But then, you know, you drive down the road and the snow scraper hasn't come yet and you've got to drive through the snow. And then when you get to the shop, nobody knows how to park because they can't see the line. So they just park wherever they want. And then you slip and slide on the snow while you're walking into the shop. And it's crazy. I mean, going to get milk can take you half an hour, you know, where in summer it would take you 5 minutes.
Let's talk a little bit about leaving South Africa. When and how did that start and what's your involvement with that?
The Facebook page.
Hmm.
Yeah, so another guy started it first, and then I was one of the first to join, and then he made me an admin of it, and then I just started running it from there. When those things sort of came out, there was no real support group, even like this, you know. It was all based on self-research, and Facebook back in those days was still pretty primitive. So you had to do most of the research yourself or find out. So I just thought, you know, it would be good for a base for people to go to ask general questions. So I try to build it. And, you know, as your time goes on, you get busy and that. So I don't monitor it or update it that much as I used to. Mm-hmm. But it is I try and update it as much as I can.
It seems relatively active, though. I think there are about 14 posts the last time I saw the last week, which is obviously not crazy. And it's obviously that you don't do a massive amount of admin stuff, but I have gone through the group and there's some files, there's some useful files, there's some definitely some useful posts in there. And you've got a group of about 8,300 or so.
Yeah.
Who would you say that the group is aimed at? Who's it best for?
For people that are not sure where they want to go or need help or advice on where to go, or in certain countries, maybe Australia is their target, or Canada, or the UK. But what I say to people, don't necessarily move to a country just to get out of South Africa. You must want to go to a country because you want to go there. You want to experience that. I mean, I went to Canada because I wanted to experience the Rockies and the autumn and the snow. I wanted to see that. I wanted to experience it. So that's why I chose Canada.
Sure.
And then at least I can say, look, I've been there. I know what it's like. Because, you know, if somebody says, oh, I want to go to the UK just to get away from South Africa, well, you might get to the UK and not be happy. You want to go to the UK to experience the castles, the culture, the pub, you know, the Highlands of Scotland. You want to go there and say you have a reason to go there. You don't want to move somewhere just to move.
Yeah.
Because that might not bring you happiness.
Sure. It's a fascinating point that's been repeated across quite a few conversations, is that, you know, what you want is more powerful pull factors than push factors.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really want to be in a situation where you just go, oh, I just want to leave South Africa. I'll go anywhere.
Mm.
Or I'll go to the UK because it's the easiest place and all that. And then you're not actually interested. You're not actually that passionate about the UK. You're just passionate about not being in South Africa.
Correct.
Yeah. but that said, there will be a certain number of people who, for example, have experienced a violent crime, or they've had kids and they just feel that, you know, maybe their kids aren't going to have all the opportunities they could wish for them, where they do feel like they don't have an option. In that case, do you have any advice?
Yeah, I would say, look, if you're going to leave, go for it. Don't hold back, because if your skill is on that list now, then go for it, you know. And my greatest point I would say to somebody is, if you go to a country and you're not happy there, at least stay long enough to get the passport, because then at least you've always got a plan B. I believe in insurance. You know, you're not going to buy insurance for your house if the roof is on fire. You're going to have it long before that.
Sure.
So I'm a big advocate for that, for having as many nationalities as you can possibly get, because it just opens more opportunity for you, more places to invest, more places to get educated, more opportunities for your kids too.
Sure.
There's no harm in having as many nationalities as you can obtain in your lifetime, because you can pass them down to your kids.
And generally in the UK, let's take target number one for most people, that process of getting that passport is, how many years on average would you say that takes?
Depends on how fast people want to push for it. But I would say if you can get an ancestral visa, you could probably do it in about 5 or 6 years, I'd say. If you pushed and you applied on time and did it accordingly, I would say 5-6 years, you could have it done and dusted.
Right. Interesting. These are, I mean, when we talked about you getting a plumber certification as well, that timeline was 5 years. So this is really for people who are thinking ahead. It's not, I want to leave tomorrow and I'm just going to figure it out. You know, this is planning required stuff.
Yeah, basically with me, it wasn't when I was going to leave, I didn't do it based on with what I've got, where can I go to? I said, this is where I want to go. What do I need to get there? Let me acquire that and then I can go there.
Sure.
That's how I did it.
I was just going to ask if you did the certification part-time while you were still working.
Yeah, I mean, I just jumped into it. I went into it full-time, and because, you know, I wanted to get it done, and I'm that kind of person that if I put my mind to something, I get it done and I do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no point beating around the bush, and people sort of procrastinate a lot in life, and the next thing, they've wasted all these years and they've achieved nothing. If you're going to do it, go for it. I mean, to me, Australia is, there's no question, in my opinion, is the best country in the world.
Amazing. And I think, you know, there are lots of people who certainly agree. My friend Reva, who was our first interview, lives in Perth and she loves it as well. So yeah, I'm looking at my list of questions here, and I think because we're talking about quite a number of countries, a lot of them won't apply. But what I will ask is, what I'm quite interested in is the moments when you realize you're somewhere. So for example, when I lived in Japan, I would often have these moments where I just stop and go, oh my goodness, I live in Japan. You know, often it's standing outside a temple shrine, or you're in a hot spring or something like this. And you go like, wow, this is like a quintessentially alien for a South African, but comfortable because I live here moment. In Canada and in Australia, Did you ever have those moments where you stop and go, wow, this is like insane?
Yeah, I tell you, there's a highway that goes from Calgary up to Jasper. It's called Highway 93. And if you drive that highway, your breath is taken away, how beautiful those mountains are. It's just absolutely, you can't describe it. And for anybody, I would say, if there's anything you do in Canada, you've got to do that highway. Okay. And then when you're driving that, you sure realize how beautiful it is. And wow, look where I am. It's just, it's insane. It's absolutely fantastic. In Australia, yeah, you can say the same for basically when you see a kangaroo or, you know. When we walk along our local beach in the evenings, you know, we just walk down there and we just, every time we go, we sort of acknowledge how blessed we are to live here and how good it is. It's really something else.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like you guys have quite a similar, it's interesting to see the parallel between your lifestyle and mine. I live in Melkbosstrand here, just up the coast from Cape Town. Got this massive beach that obviously continues all the way from Milnerton all the way up to, well, then you have to stop at Coburg or they shoot you. But along Melkbos Beach, when you walk along that beach, you just appreciate, because you've got a view of the mountain as well, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it's a nice place.
Yeah, it's a lovely kind of evening lifestyle. We've covered that you do feel work-wise as well, the opportunity is greater in Australia.
Yeah, I can speak for Western Australia only, like not, wouldn't be an accurate opinion if I had to say I can speak for the whole of Australia, but definitely for Western Australia, there's a lot of opportunity here because, like I say, there's a lot of mining, there's a lot of industry going on, and if you get into the right career path, I mean, your options are endless.
Yeah.
Especially for, you know, I find Australia is, if you want to change your career or upskill or something, you know, there's so many programs and government things that can help you do that. You don't need to, you know, like in South Africa, I sort of found that once you're in something, you were sort of set there for life, because if you wanted to change, you had to fork out a lot of money. You had to find the finance to change that. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Australia, it's very easy. There's sort of no excuse for anybody to fail here, in my opinion. If you become homeless here, it's basically your choice. That way I see it. There's government housing, there's social programs, there's all kinds of things that there's really no reason to fail.
Right. You said that when you moved to Canada, you didn't know anyone and you just showed up with a couple of suitcases and you didn't take anything with you essentially. Was the same true when you moved from Canada to Australia?
Yeah, we sold everything, even our house, everything we sold up and left.
Was that a difficult process, or did you emotionally, I guess?
No, we sort of, as a couple, and we sort of detach ourselves from a lot of earthly items. You know, all of those kinds of things are replaceable. And we just enjoy moving. We have to stay settled now, obviously, because our kids are going through high school. But we just enjoy the adventure of it, eh? You know,
sure.
I love landing in a new place and sort of finding my feet and see how this works, how that works. The different culture, different government situation. I love it, eh? But for now, I just have to settle.
So broadly, I guess you would say that for people who want to emigrate, it's helpful if you're a person who is adaptable to change and keen to change.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Are there any other kind of traits that you would say lead to successful immigrations, happy immigrations?
Yeah. When you get to a place, don't tell those people how good it was back there or you know what, in South Africa, we do it better than you. You must adapt and say, oh, okay, you know, that's how you do it. Have you tried it this way? Don't just come out and say, oh, no, I think your way is rubbish. I'm going to try it my way. I think my way is better. You know, but then that's with anything. It sort of puts people's back up if you just say, oh, we better then. And yeah, I mean, just adapt and just accept that, you know, the country you left is changing, and it's, you know, always try and remind yourself of why you left, not all the good times. I find a lot of people reminisce about the old good times that they had, but they've got to realize that the place has changed a lot.
Sure. Well, it does seem to go two directions, doesn't it? Either you get nostalgic or you get bitter. Where you follow all the negative news about South Africa and you just constantly harp on about how stuffed it is and everything. So, yeah.
Yeah, but even as a person that's left, you sort of without knowing it, you've changed too. So when you go back, you know, it's not the same as what you remember it, because in that time that you've left, the country's changed too. The people have changed while you've changed.
Sure, sure. So from a weirdly specific question here, because I'm a new dad, when you moved from Calgary to Australia, you were, how old were your kids?
So my daughter was then 8 and my son was 3, I think. Yeah, 3. Yep.
Right. So as two, you know, nigh on middle-aged adults with two kids, how do you make friends when you move to a new country, or how did you do it?
So in Canada, I found that I had a lot more friends there through work, and just we were more social in our 30s. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot more friends that I still stay in contact with today. You know, you build a network in a country, it doesn't just disappear when you leave. But over here now, we sort of, I would say in Australia, especially in the smaller regional parts, you've got to really go out to clubs. I mean, not nightclubs, but you've got to join like some kind of social club, like a football club or a cricket club or, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. And go and you've got to put a lot more effort into meeting people. We have where we live, there's often like food carts in the park here where one has chips, one has donuts, whatever. You can go down there and just talk to people and meet people. But yeah, you've got to really be a social butterfly to meet people.
Sure. Would you rate, I think that kind of the food cart queue or the coffee shop queue is a good generalized rating system for how chatty a country's culture is. If you just start yakking to an Australian, will they look at you strangely or will they be open to it?
No, they're very accepting people. I reckon Australians are great people. They're very friendly. They always want to help you out. And if there's something they can do for you, they'll do it for you. No question.
Awesome.
I know a lot of South Africans feel that the Aussies don't like them, but no, I've found quite the opposite.
To kind of wrap up, I guess my question to you would be, what advice would you give those considering immigrating? You've already given a lot of good advice, but any particular resources that you would point them towards?
If you are looking at Australia, you can use a job searching website called Seek. Mm-hmm. And on there, you'd be able to search by location and you could get a general idea of where your kind of job industry or skill would be needed, you know, and you can tone it down to region, city, all that kind of things. And a lot of times on there, you'd see the wages. There's a website called fairwork.gov.au that you can look at what the average salary is in your career, your mm-hmm. skill set. And then lawyers, I can recommend a lawyer that I used to come here. They were called Visa Magnet in Brisbane, in the Gold Coast.
Sure.
And the lady's name that runs it, her name's Anna Dobos. She's originally from Hungary.
Anna Dobos, is it a double B?
No, one B, D-O-B-O-S. She was originally from Hungary, but she lives on the Gold Coast now. And same thing, she loves it, eh?
I'll put a link to the website in the show copy.
Yeah. And just, I would say to people, you know, don't procrastinate, just do it. You've got nothing to lose. Like if you move to a country and you don't like it, you know, you can always go back. It's not like you've lost anything, but you won't know. I'd rather die regretting things I've tried than regretting things I didn't try.
Absolutely. Sure. So I think if I could synthesize what I've heard from you, it would be kind of number one, go somewhere that you want to go to, not just away from South Africa.
Yeah.
Have a plan for it in terms of, for example, your recommendation about, you know, if you want to get into Canada or Australia, a tradie certification is a golden key to do it, because those of us IT and consulting and management and marketing and all that stuff, like, they don't need you anymore, especially if you're over 25. You know,
correct. Now if you're young and you want to do IT and you're certified in that, there's no harm in you becoming a carpenter as a plan B or as the next level, you know. And that if that carpentry ticket can get you into Canada or Australia where your IT ticket can't, why not?
Sure.
Like I say, once they've granted you that residence visa, you can do whatever you want. You can go back to IT if you want, no problem.
Sure. And then you'll be someone who can also actually fix the plumbing at home.
Correct.
Because I think of myself as a very useless marketing person who have very limited abilities to do anything useful. If the zombie apocalypse comes, I'm going to get eaten first, to be honest.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty good with my hands and my brain. You know, I haven't done plumbing for years now. So I've elevated quite a lot from there. So I'm pretty happy where I am now.
Amazing. Of course, would you recommend people check out Leaving South Africa as well and get involved there?
Yeah, they can. They're free to ask me questions, and I'll answer as best as I can. You know, from what I know and what I've experienced. But like I say, you know, I immigrated to Canada more 12 years ago, so the visa that I got in on, or the skill set, might not be on there anymore. But I highly doubt that trades would ever be taken off there.
Yes. Yeah, of course. I mean, you look at the labor shortages in trucking in the UK and the EU. You look at, I'm on LinkedIn with, for example, Robbie Raglis from New World Immigration. He works in the Canadian region. And you constantly see ads for, you know, they want mechanics, they want tradies. So, yeah. I think South Africans are very used to thinking that trades can't pay the bills. But in countries like Canada and Australia, they certainly can.
Oh, I tell you, they are very well paid. Very, very well paid. You know, you see guys here, they make well over $200,000 a year, no problem.
Very interesting. Paul, thank you so much for your time. Is there any ask of the audience, anything that you'd like to leave us with?
Just because you were born in South Africa doesn't mean that that's where you need to live for the rest of your life. Go out and adventure. There's a whole world out there. Use your youth and use your skills and your life to go and do anything you want. Once you leave there, it's the world's open to you. You know, if you don't like it, then you're unhappy, just go. Don't settle for it. I know that's hard for some people to say, though they might not have the finances to go, but you know, I didn't have much finances when I left, and I made it happen. I made it work. So if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Very inspiring stuff. Thank you so much, Paul, for your time, for your expertise, your experience. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's good, Jonathan, and all the best.
South African Expats is produced by Jonathan Varnker and brought to you by Ping Productions.